This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. There it is, right there. I knew Ben would have it handy.
Oh, because they scored. The Astros scored more than three runs.
They did so much stuff yesterday, Seth. They did all the things. Yeah, Framber pitched well. Yes, the barrier for playing this song has now become scoring three or more runs, but they're back to 500. They end the road trip on a winning note, and Framber was Framber yesterday.
They arrived at home plate multiple times, three or greater times, and sometimes in very exciting fashion. DiCenzo just threading the needle with his left hand to have what would be overturned call the safe at home, sliding head first into home plate, and just sneaking his left hand onto home plate, being called out, but then having it overturned.
That was crazy. I'm like, God, what is this catcher doing? It's like the catcher thought there was a rule that you couldn't tag him on his hands, that you had to tag him on his face.
Yeah.
You know, like it was weird. If you didn't see it,
blocking,
go find it.
He was blocking the plate but taking every effort to not block the plate.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't want to break the rule because you can't, like, stand in. He had the foot behind the plate. He was perfectly within the confines of the rules, but it's like, bro, you can touch him on the hand. It's okay. You don't have to wait for his face.
He went too far. He was being so careful not to block home plate. And I knew you would be a huge fan of this, Sean.
What's that?
Was that everything that got... What really got the ball rolling in that inning was a bunt. A bunt by Chaz.
Yeah.
A Chaz McCormick bunt.
If you're unplugged yesterday, Astros win 9-1 over the Brewers. Welcome in, everybody, on a Thursday. I've been very critical of Chaz since 2023, really. You know, like the last really good year he had. Chaz at one time was an everyday outfielder in Major League Baseball with an OPS in the mid-800s. He was with a green arrow up next to his name, and he was a hero here for his postseason exploits when they won the World Series.
There's still a snow angel or a dirt angel up there.
Up in Citizens Bank Park, yes.
Yeah. They put it in carbonite.
It's weird.
They'll forever commemorate him.
That's right. Yeah. It's awfully weird. They're commemorating him in a visiting ballpark for Chaz. But anyways, so Chaz, not all that long ago, was a above average major league hitter, and that now he's only had like 25 plate appearances or something like that, and yet leads Major League Baseball in sacrifice bunts.
I hate that they've
turned him into a pitcher, basically batting ninth and sacrifice bunting. That's what he is. So yeah, I actually was frustrated, Seth, when they got a 3-0 lead. But the two-run inning they had, they scored two runs without any hits. I'm like, this is the most...
Oh, I know. Well, the Brewers pitcher was walking everybody.
Oh, dude. It was the most Astro inning ever to build a 3-0 lead. Chaz with his new sack bunt gimmick. Two runs scored with no hits. Yiner leaving the bases loaded to end the inning. That inning, like, oh, this is the Astros offense in a nutshell right here this year. Perfect encapsulation.
Has Blum, you know, I'm like you, a lot of times I'm watching with the sound off. Has Blum done anything like a play on his old mom, bring me the meatloaf? Has he done like, mom, bring me the bunt, bring me the bunt cake?
Bring me, no.
Mom!
No.
Where's my bunt cake?
But if he's listening, I think you just gave him an idea. That actually might be kind of funny until the 20th time. So they win yesterday 9-1. And the exciting part you're talking about, yeah, the building the 3-0 lead was very Astro-like. Jeremy Peña, feeling really good, Seth, about my over 14.5 home run bet on Jeremy Peña. Leads the ball club right now, if I'm not mistaken. He's got 5. There's no chance there's anybody on this team with more than 5 home runs right now.
He is, since he's been the leadoff, he's got a 936 OPS. Very far above average.
Yes.
The power is really showing up. He's turning into a first pitch assassin. That 3-run homer was on the first pitch in the top of the in his appearance at the top of the 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a career 338 average against the first pitch of a plate appearance.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, there's a little bit of Springer in him. A
little bit.
I think when it comes to just being a leadoff guy who could ambush you right off the bat.
That's been a good move. You know, that's been a good move putting him in leadoff and putting Altuve just hasn't been playing well at all lately. But Peña getting moved up to number one to lead off in the order has been good. So they end on a positive note. That was nice to see out of Framber yesterday. That was really good to see.
Framber and Chandler Rome had the stat with Framber that kind of tells the whole story now that he's got enough. Like 5 of his outings are quality starts, and he's got a 1.32 ERA in those 5 quality starts. The other 3 starts, he's allowed 16 runs in 14 innings. So I'm, you know, and this is especially, it's easy to say this after yesterday, but all right. Sometimes at the beginning of the season, you just through random luck, you stack up a couple of your bad outings and it just looks bad because it's a small sample size. But by and large, we've seen the classic good version of Framber more times than we've not. It's just a matter of him just smoothing it out, as he's shown an ability to do, hopefully over the course of the rest of the season.
Gaining some consistency. Yeah, no doubt about that. And if it were, honestly, if it were a bigger deal, then I think we would have talked about it. We just haven't talked about Framber that much. You know,
we've talked about him in the aggregate with the other starting pitchers that basically everybody but Hunter Brown you don't feel awesome about right now.
We haven't teased him into a segment or anything about is Framber. You know, is bad Framber here to stay? You know, like I guess I'm saying I haven't been concerned that he's going to have a 4.39 ERA for the entire season. You know, like have you been concerned?
When I've brought it up, he's very much been one of my feelings about where the Astros are in this precarious state of affairs where you just, we've never seen Framber playing in a contract year in the last year of his contract.
That's true.
And he's also shown he's been way more erratic than he has been for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been very worried about the fact that, man, the pitching has been what's buoying this team so far. And they've got multiple guys that are right on the edge if they fall off onto the bad side into the cliff, then this team is just a bad baseball team.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that they've had a lot of here early in the season, off days. You know, it feels like in between every 6 games they've had an off day. They are now starting tomorrow on 17 straight days with games. Like they're going into a stretch here where there is no rest for the weary. They got Lance they got Lance McCullers back right in time. You know,
and they're going to go with a 5-man rotation for now, but Gusto is available for potentially being a starter. He'll be your long relief. So, I'm cool with that strategy just because they have no idea the way it's going to play things out. I mean, Blanco traditionally goes out there for the 4 innings, and he's a 4-inning guy these days, and you're lucky if you get 5. They'll have to use Gusto strategically and judiciously.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
Hey, by the way,
yeah,
that's just a real quick tangent.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm getting annoyed that on Twitter, you know, they'll kind of summarize what's trending in news stories for you now. Grok, the AI version, Grok is Twitter's AI.
Yeah.
He's been spending too much time on real news because yesterday I saw the summary of the George Pickens trade was Steelers make a strategic trade to the Cowboys. So I'm like, oh, dude, you've been spending so much time on the tariffs. This any kind of trade. It was a strategic trade as opposed to an impulsive trade or a frivolous trade.
Yes.
Although I didn't realize that all these non-strategic trades were being made in baseball.
You know, it's funny you say that.
Separate my church and religion and state, okay?
Yeah.
I want my fun baseball stuff to be fun baseball stuff.
Oh, God, I got to go find...
Or football, I guess.
What was
if we're
it?
Being technical.
There was something the other day. Oh, I know what it was. And I can't remember. Oh, it was my buddy Rick texted me. And he was listening to another station here in town that's not a sports station, but they report sports. You know, they do more news on this station. Not going to say which station. But they were in the news, in the sports report, they were talking about Tank Dell. And they said that, you know, there was all these reports over the weekend about Tank, because there was, you know, like D'Amico had a quote about Tank at the golf tournament or something, that he's in good spirits. And Jonathan Alexander had reported that he probably won't play in 2025.
Yeah.
This other station reported that Tank Dell had a setback. That he had a setback because he wasn't going to play. When everybody that is in the sports bubble knows that this is what was supposed to happen. So I know that's not what Gronk did, but it is an example of when you start to take newsy things and you dip your toe in the water of sports. You got to be careful about how you report it, man. Us sports people, that's not a setback. That's what we've been expecting with Tank, you know?
Well, and especially, like, if you're a non-sports person or a non-Texans person, if you're just kind of scrolling through the headlines and maybe you just see a few things about Tank Dell, you'll also see that he underwent surgery.
Yeah.
Turns out the surgery was to get a leg sleeve tattoo. Yeah.
That's right. That he went under. He was under anesthesia.
Under.
Yeah.
He's under general anesthesia.
Yeah. That's funny. All right, so Astros win 9-1. My daughter was at the Red Sox game last night, Seth, with her boyfriend Charlie, and I got some reports on Alex Bregman from her.
Oh, good. Yeah,
Judy, not a baseball fan.
Judy, not a baseball person whatsoever.
Yeah.
Charlie knows. Charlie's a sports fan.
Charlie's a huge sports fan. So they were at Fenway last night, and I saw that Bregman had hit a home run. So I text her. I'm like, hey, Alex Bregman hit a home run that you're at. He used to be an Astro. Yes, he slayed. That's my daughter. I said, hey, that hurts. We miss him. At least he's in Boston. Okay.
Thanks, Judy.
Then she texts me. She's giving me Bregman updates. Ooh, Bregman's up right now. Got a hit. Otherwise, Red Sox are toast. Oh, he just helped them get two runs.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. He just helped them get two runs. Yeah, I'm like, okay.
That'd be a good we should have Judy write the sports headlines.
Oh, that would
when we do headlines.
That would be funny. Yeah, but you can't cheat and go look at an act. You can't like just summarize an article that you saw already.
Alex Bregman helps two other players score runs.
It's like I'm
he was thrown out, so ultimately not a great play.
Dude, it's like I'm texting with a 13-year-old. He just helped him get two runs. So slay of him.
Shut up. She didn't say that.
She did too. So slay of him.
This is why Harvard is losing.
I know.
Sean.
I know. She got an Ivy League education. Holy smokes. All right. So slay of him. All right. Payne and Pendergast. We're off and running. On a Thursday. We got a lot to get to. Hey, Nick Caserio joined us on the show yesterday. If you missed the entire interview, it's up on YouTube. It's got its own YouTube entry. And Nice clean audio. That's right.
No pauses. no inadvertent pregnant pauses.
Nothing at all.
Yeah.
And also it's up on the Odyssey app too. If you want to take a listen. Good conversation yesterday with the Texans GM. He talked about a bunch of things. We will lead in with Nick Caserio on what has been, I think, his most universally lauded draft pick. We will have that for you and more coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We had Texans GM Nick Caserio on yesterday. We'll sprinkle in some of the audio from Nick throughout the show. You can find the entire interview. We talked for about 45 minutes with him. You can find it on the Odyssey app or on our YouTube page. Good conversation. Yesterday, rookies start up. The rookies get their first crack in a Texans uniform tomorrow at rookie minicamp, and we will have eyes on that tomorrow. Friday's practice is open to the media, so we'll be out there tomorrow for that. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday. I would say, Seth, I think it's fair to say that, you know, you and I are pretty plugged into what people are saying about the Texans, either, you know, on audio, video, or written word. it seems like most of the people, if not all the people that we consume, are on board with the Jalen Nowell pick in the third round. That seems to be the one to me, just gut feel, that's getting the most praise right now. Not that he's the best player they drafted, but for where they got him and what he can bring to an offense that has a need with for that type of receiver with Tank Dell out for the year. A lot of people really praising Nick for that pick right there.
Right, yeah, yeah. And potentially out for the year with Tank Dell for any of those of you that haven't been following closely. Yeah, that there are a lot of people that were very, very high on Jalen Nowell. His obvious drawback is his size. He's just not a big fella, which the NFL is replete with smaller receivers who have done really well, but you got to make up for it somehow. So we kind of press Nick for what makes him different and what's the thing that pushes him into the NFL despite his small size.
I would say his toughness, his overall instinctiveness, his playing style. He's got good speed, I would say, for his position. I would say in his particular case, he has good speed. You know, he has good time speed. So those two kind of marry up. He's got strong hands, even though he's smaller. He's not like that small. He's a pretty sturdy, I would say, rocky, kind of blocked up kind of dude. Honestly, his build is similar in some respects to Christian Kirk. They're not small players. They might be quote unquote shorter, but they're not necessarily small players. They might play big for their size. How that, I would say, develops and evolves over time, we'll find out. There'll be some nuance involved. There's a coaching element involved. So there's a lot of things that go into being, you know, a good player. And if you have maybe an area that you're deficient, what do you have on the other side of it that you can help offset? And I'd say that applies to really all players. There's no quote unquote perfect player. They all have things that they can work on. They all have things that they can improve. And each player just has to try to maximize whatever they have to the best of their ability.
That was a good breakdown. The part of that breakdown, I know we're going to get into other parts of Nowell here in a second. I like the part where he says that, and I forget exactly how he said it, but he has good speed. He's got good, I forget what he said, like time speed. You know, basically what he's saying was like combine speed. And that those two marry up with each other, you know, Kamari Lassiter would be an example of a guy where they don't marry up, you know, where he's got good speed on every SEC game that you're watching. He seems like there's no problem with him keeping up with SEC receivers, and he runs a 4.65 at the combine. Like, Nowell, his speed, whatever it's saying on the stopwatch, it's playing out in the games also.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it, too, is that I think he's a really good route runner, but not a refined route runner. And when you watch him play, he had one of the best verticals and broad jumps at the combine, and that meshes up with what you see on film. There's an explosiveness. He's one of these guys that looks like he's about to jump out of the gym every step he takes. So if you really refine that and make it crisper, you can really see where that could be lethal in a lot of ways. So that's something that obviously he'll continue to work on, and hopefully it pays dividends. When people talk about, okay, why is everybody gushing about him? And yes, he's small, but he still went in the third round, even though he did a lot of things like a first rounder. One of the things people bring up is his drop rate, that he had a lot of drops in college. He had 5 muffed punts. But the story with Nowell, I think, is if you look at his progression year by year, 2022, he had an 8.1% drop rate. 2023, 5.4%. 2024, 3.4%, which is 3.4%. It's not awesome, but it's totally acceptable.
You can live with that. If you're doing enough other things, you can live with that. Yeah.
Where if you look at, you know, Xavier Worthy, guy that got drafted high, obviously has incredible physical skill and talent, but he's smaller. Xavier Worthy's drop rate his final season in college was 6.3%. Okay. The year before it was 10.6%.
Wow.
So it's, you know, like Xavier Worthy, one of the knocks on him was just how sure-handed is he. Jalen Nowell, for whatever it's worth, showed steady improvement in college, and by his final season was better than Xavier Worthy. I'm not saying he's a better receiver than Xavier Worthy, but for the biggest knock against him, he showed definitive improvement.
Yeah, Worthy's a classic example of, and I don't know what his drop rate was in his rookie year last year with the Chiefs. Yeah. I just didn't follow it all that close, but he's a classic example of he brings enough other stuff to the table where you live. If that's the bad, you live with it. I mean the Chiefs, he's a crucial part of their offense. You know, they don't really have, especially with Rashee Rice out for the year, they didn't really have a number one last year, and they were using him out of the backfield and on screens and everything else. So that'll be interesting to see how Nick Caley deploys Nowell.
Worthy was 10.8% last year, which, wow. Which as the AI will tell you, places him amongst the leaders in dropped passes.
Which, is that what it says?
Yeah, like he's leading it in a bad way.
Yeah. Oh, they're like excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. He's funny. A league leader.
That's funny. Yeah. That's fun. Wow, 10 point over. So over 10%. And yet I would tell you, just from, I mean, I didn't watch every Chiefs game last year. I watched at least two from beginning to end, plus several more. If Xavier Worthy were to go out of the lineup for some reason, the other 31 teams in the NFL are pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
You know, he is a, for whatever that drop rate is, and Seth just said it was over 10%. Boy, that is a guy who helps make that offense go to the degree that it went last year. They weren't a great offense last year. All right, more from Caserio. Of course, we know that there was the draft day call where Jalen Reed from Penn State. Do we have the full call, Ben, or just the hot key? All right, if you recall, this was the phone call from Nick Caserio and the staff to Jalen Reed, safety out of Penn State, when they drafted him in the sixth round.
Hello?
Jalen, Nick Caserio with the Texans. How you doing, bud?
Let's do it.
Congratulations. We're going to turn the pick in. We're excited to have
Let's
you.
Do it.
You're a good football
Let's
player.
Do it.
So,
Let's do it.
Yeah, let me.
Let's do it.
Here's Coach Ryan.
Let's do it.
Hey, Jalen, congrats, man.
Hey, get the Texans hat. Get the Texans hat. Let's do it. Appreciate it, Coach.
You get that Texans hat ready, man. We're fired up to have you.
All right, bet. Let's do it, Coach. Let's do it.
All right, I'm passing you over to our owner here, Kelvin. Yes.
All right, bet. Let's do it. Man, that's good. I'm ready. Let's go.
Give everyone a hug there that helps get you here, okay, bud? And we'll see you soon.
I got you.
Congrats.
Cal was the one I couldn't wait to see get on with the Let's Do It barrage going on. Like, you know, yeah. Nick was funny. D'Amico's been in a locker room hundreds of times before with psychopaths like Jalen Reed sounded like. Cal yeah. was the one I couldn't wait for. I'm like, God, I hope he keeps screaming, let's do it, when Cal's on the phone.
It's probably kind of tough because you also want to share in the jubilation, and yet it's also, it's the end of the draft, man. You've been there. Yeah, these guys are, it's all day.
Well, we've got to convey some information to you too, Jalen. Like there is a conversation that needs to take place at some point.
It is. Honestly, there is something about look, a guy from Penn State going in the sixth round. Lots of guys could maybe feel kind of like put out that they even got that they lasted that long or whatever. But Jalen Reed is just he's pumped. Hyped up just to get drafted and have an opportunity. And he knows about the Texans defense. I think there are a lot of the young defensive players in the draft, including the ones that didn't get drafted by the Texans, they know just even if you casually watch NFL football, you see that, oh, whenever the Texans defense is on, oh, wow, look at that. Wow, yeah. That's a lot of big hits. Oh, well, wow. Oh, there's a guy getting suspended for three games
yeah.
for playing football. These guys.
Yeah, and then you meet D'Amico Ryans at the combine like he did and gushed about that yeah. when he had the podium. Yeah. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday. We played the hot key of Jalen Reed as we were asking him the question. Here's Nick Caserio on Jalen Reed.
Yeah, no, I was trying to just introduce him. Hey, excited to have you here, and I couldn't talk, so kind of let him have his day in the limelight. He was excited, so at least he didn't say let's effing go, and then we had that recorded. And so, then we would have had a bigger issue.
Yeah, but, social media so. Teams like ah, yeah.
A lot of energy, very excited, and that's kind of his personality. That's how he plays. So, but that was a fun moment.
Yeah, he'll fit right yeah. in.
I could see Caserio actually looking over at the social media people and being like, "You're welcome." Yeah,
oh,
yeah. There's a well, you're welcome for all the clicks, fellas.
Well, and we know that actually Nick himself is not afraid to drop an F-bomb or an S-bomb now in press conferences.
On social media side
it's
of things, yeah.
He's got a
yeah,
subtle heel thing going on right now with that.
Yeah, there's no apologies to the social media department for stuff like that.
No,
they know how to bleep something right quick.
God,
yeah.
no.
And it's going to get more clips.
It was really cool. Yesterday, a video popped up on my timeline of James Franklin, the head coach at Penn State, Jalen Reed's head coach in college, and he was doing a podium on Saturday. They must have had their spring game, if I had to guess, on that Saturday of day three of the draft. Otherwise, why is he doing a press conference on Saturday afternoon? But he found out that Jalen Reed got drafted by the Texans during his media availability on Saturday, James Franklin. So it was cool to see. He was pumping it. He was so excited. He was pumping his fists. It was really, it was a, it was a very organic and real moment. Someone informed him in the middle of that press conference that Jalen Reed had just been picked by the Texans. It was really cool. Yeah, it was really cool.
Seems like a popular guy with football people.
Yeah.
So far, I've been good. I don't think I've made a mistake yet on a Jalen or a Jaden in terms
yourself,
of messing up
man.
Their names.
Don't.
Well, it's actually I've realized it's actually pretty easy now because I got a 50. I've got a 50% chance of getting the guy's name right just by saying Jalen.
Yeah.
I could say Jalen Marks.
Yeah.
You know, if I mess up Woody Marks or something. But the spelling is getting to me.
Yeah,
I still haven't figured out who's Jalen with an I, Jalen with an E. Yeah, like Jaden, whether it's an E or an I, it's not natural to me.
There's Jalen's. These Jalen's all have a Y in there. For you know, Jalen Petrie does not. The Jalen's they all drafted have a Y in there. J A Y. Yeah. So yeah, it's
the fact that they all start J-A-Y.
Yep.
That four of them that start with J makes it very confusing.
Yep, you've done great so far on that.
Thanks.
Give yourself a ding. Do you have your bell nearby? Yeah. Give yourself a ding. There you go. All right, people had fun with this next cut from Nick Caserio yesterday. We asked him, we mentioned how last year we awarded Will Anderson the body type change award for, most good weight put on year over year from rookie year to second year. The question was about Blake Fisher. I had asked him, like, what have we seen? Because we're hoping that Blake Fisher puts on some of that Will Anderson weight in the offseason. We asked him about Blake Fisher, and he actually volunteered a couple other names that have been getting after it in the weight room.
Can we give it to D'Amico?
D'Amico.
I said this the other day. He would definitely beat my ass, so I'll try to avoid. But no, he looks good. Blake looks good. He's been here. I'll give you two other players, actually. So Ladarius Henderson has actually sort of reshaped his body. I think nobody's worked harder than LD. I know he lost his whole year last year because he was dealing with foot injuries, but I think he's lost, 15 to 20 pounds of body fat. He wasn't able to do a lot, but I would say the level of commitment and focus that he's shown, honest to God, it's a tremendous accomplishment. And I would say just looking at Kamari, he looks physically in his upper body a little bigger, a little thicker. It goes back to hard work, discipline, consistent, focused work. And I would say those are some players at this point that have shown that. We have a number of players that have done that. I think phase one, the voluntary program, we had 93, 94, 95% of the team that was here. It's only May. You still have May, June, July, and even when we're not here over the summer, those 4 to 6 weeks are vitally important. So a lot of players that have made a lot of progress to this point, hopefully they continue to make it over the course of the spring.
There you go. That Ladarius Henderson, man, got some attention because he's got kind of a cult following on the Texans Twitter sphere right now.
Yeah. And he is very intriguing because he has a lot of what you'd want in an offensive tackle, obviously. They drafted him in the seventh round. So he played on a very good team in college, but he wasn't as consistent and just wasn't as impressive. It was simple,
seventh round pick
as that.
For a
reason, right. Yeah. I don't quite understand why he's become a cult favorite and why people are so bullish on it, because it wasn't like the play in college was so impressive that, oh man, I can't believe this guy. People before the draft largely expected him to go either late in the draft or undrafted at all.
Yeah.
But there's potential there. He's got all of the traits and everything. The fact that he lost 15 pounds of fat. And he's a guy that was 305, 310. He wasn't a huge offensive lineman. It suggests that he also probably added 10 or 15 pounds of muscle.
Yeah.
So whatever injuries were dragging him down, obviously in his rookie year, and he ends up having both feet were an issue. However much that affected him in college, then that might be where the upside is. This is a guy that just wasn't physically right. As people accurately pointed out, on X yesterday, all day long in my mentions, were we not saying something similar about Kenyon Green last year?
We were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we were.
We were.
Yes, we were.
Yep.
So, but this is what annoys me. I just put out there that, hey, this is what Nick Caserio said about Ladarius Henderson.
That's it.
And immediately people think I'm making an argument that Ladarius Henderson is going to be all pro next year or something. Hey, it's a nice little nugget of positive information. I'm sorry I ruined your Wednesday with positive information.
Dude, you're just serving up the people. That's what you're doing. Yeah. You're just providing a service, you know? It's
body change transformation that paid off last year, Henry Toa Toa.
Yes.
Henry Toa Toa called himself I can't remember what he said. He said I was doughy or I was fat or I was chubby or whatever his rookie year.
Yeah.
He came back in training camp last year and he looked chiseled.
Kind of blamed his wife, who's a really good cook, for his doughiness the year before.
Yeah.
You know, that's shameful.
Out here trying to take money out of my pocket,
that's
lady.
That's it. It's your money,
Stop
too.
Stop serving up the good vittles. Yeah.
That's right. How about Kamari getting the mention there, too? That's a little scary, right?
It's a little scary. Somebody
in a good way.
Yeah. Well, you know what? A couple people brought up that, hey, all right, are we positive or sure that it's really good that Kamari Lassiter is now they assumed he's gaining weight. It doesn't necessarily mean he's gained weight. It might just be that he's kind of changed his body composition.
There's
a lot of
Kamari is one of these guys whose workouts pop up on Twitter a lot and or on Instagram. And there's a lot of people who had heard Nick say that yesterday. Like three or four people came to me and said, hey, I've been watching Kamari's videos. He definitely looks like he's changed his body a little bit. So, for whatever that's worth.
No, and he's, if you think about J.J. Watt, his rookie year, go back and look at some pictures of J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
He had baby fat.
You
see this with a lot of guys. Yeah. Aaron Donald, Aaron Donald went from a guy that was looked kind of like he could be a future Jerry Ball or something when he was in college. Because Jerry Ball was a nose tackle who was 360 pounds, but 6 foot tall.
Ironic last name. He looked like a ball.
He was, yes. But Aaron Donald became one of the most chiseled players in the NFL.
Yep.
But Kamari Lassiter might just be leaning out a little bit.
Yep. All right, headlines. We'll circle back to the Astros, NBA playoffs. Boy, some big news in the NBA playoffs that we will get to. And a little follow-up on the big trade from yesterday, about 24 hours ago, with George Pickens. Some questions answered as to what this is going to look like for the Cowboys this coming season. We've got all of that coming up in headlines next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, big thanks to the Men's Tea Clinic for sponsoring headlines. Let's start with the Astros. They beat the Brewers yesterday. 9-1, the final score, so that was good. The Astros actually, I believe, with a positive run differential on this 2-4 road trip. When they were winning big.
Yeah.
But they lose 4 out of 6 on this road trip, but they finish on a good note, beating the Brewers 9-1 yesterday. Off today, and then they've got the Cincinnati Reds in town this weekend. 17 straight days of baseball starting up on Friday of this week. But the big story in yesterday's game, the 9 runs, obviously a big story. Jeremy Peña with the big blow in there with a 3-run homer to take it from 3-1 to 6-1, and then Framber Valdez, Seth, 7 innings pitched yesterday, 100 pitches, looked like the old Framber, 1 run over 7 innings yesterday.
Yeah, and I think with the two stories about just guys over the course of the last couple weeks would be Jake Myers. Jake Myers now has an 8-game hit streak, I believe.
Yes.
Then Framber, he's got in 5 of his 8 starts so far. In 5 of those starts, he's got a 1.32 ERA, and they're all quality starts. He's got another 3 starts where he's allowed 16 runs in 14 innings.
Oh, that's like a 10 ERA.
it's not like we haven't seen good Framber or that it's not in there. It's just hopefully, as we know, Framber will have a few hiccups here and there through the course of a season. He might just be getting him out of his system early this year.
That's funny you say that. You know, you look at it that way. Like, I would be more concerned. I'm guessing his ERA is hovering around 4 now. I think it was 4.39 coming into that game. So it's probably hovering around 4 something after yesterday. Low 4s, high 3s. It's funny, you're right. I would be more concerned if Framber had, 8 starts now, I guess, for him. If he had 8 starts and they were all like Rennell Blanco starts, like with 5 innings, 3 runs, a bunch of traffic. The fact that it's been 3 really horrible ones and 5 excellent, excellent ones, I like that bit. Like, not every 4.12 ERA is created equal. I feel like you can almost eradicate really bad starts like that when you see the other 5 are what he's been the last few years.
As long as you're just cleaning up whatever
it might be.
Right. Blanco, it feels like steadily he's going out there and you're like, oh no, what's going on?
Well, he's just never, if you need a stopper, if you go into a game going, man, we need 6 innings of 1 run and a guy who's going to get us 95 pitches, Blanco ain't that guy. And he was, and the thing was, he was for a pretty long spell at the beginning of last year. You know, it's like they kind of caught up with him a little bit, I think.
So if we try to ignore Altuve's slump for the moment and think about positives over the last couple weeks.
Sure.
Yiner went 9-for-25 on the road trip. Yiner has looked much more like the guy he was at the plate
last year.
And
it's hard contact, too. It's not a fluky 9-for-25.
Yeah, and then Pena at the leadoff is going very well so far. Yeah, he's got a 936 OPS. His power has returned, and he looks more. He more looks like the better version of himself at leadoff.
Yeah. Walker's the guy that's got to get going, especially on this stretch here where there's no Yordan. We should mention that. Yordan officially diagnosed yesterday with a strained muscle in his right hand. It looks like it's just rest that he's going to need in order to get back to being Yordan.
We know from past experience that when Yordan has a hand issue, just keep him out as long as you have to until he feels 100% comfortable with it, because you don't want this to become a recurring
thing. Yeah, I mean, you're only scoring 3 runs a game with him, so why not just score 3 runs a game without him, you know?
Since you brought up Christian Walker, this is how everybody is going to feel about the cleanup spot, Sean. You know, cleanup hitter. You know, let's bring some of these boys out on the bases home. They've got, I couldn't believe this, after 36 games, the Astros have 5 extra base hits from the cleanup spot.
Yeah.
He's
the guy that's got to get going. I mean, he's the one coming up with guys on base. He's not getting benched.
That's not just him. I mean, that's a cleanup spot, but obviously.
I would say 80% of that is him. He's not coming out of the lineup. You know, he's getting paid $20 million a year. He's a good defensive player. Like, he does bring that to the table. This isn't completely an Abreu situation from the last couple of years, Jose Abreu, because Jose Abreu was terrible in the field as well. But Walker's got to get it going, or this is going to be these 9-1 games are going to be way more the outlier than they are anything that happens on a regular basis. NBA action last night: the Knicks beat the Celtics 91-90, so they take a 2-0 lead as the road team in their series. The first 6 games of the second round of the NBA playoffs were all won by the road teams, by the way. Mm-hmm. The home team didn't win a game in the second round until last night's nightcap, where the Thunder just ran the Nuggets off the floor. They beat them, I was like 149-105. It was some crazy score last night. They just ran them off the floor from jump. I watched the first quarter, it was 30-11. I'm like, all right, can go to bed. The big news, though, NBA playoff-wise, Seth, is that Steph Curry's hamstring is a grade 1 hamstring strain that's going to force him to miss at least a week, which means that this series, now granted, the Warriors are up 1-0. They're able to kind of muck their way through that game without Steph, but that's 4 games that this is going to, at least 3, if not 4 games, before he even gets reevaluated for this hamstring strain. So this gets very interesting, and this is where the acquisition of Jimmy Butler during the season. You know, Jimmy Butler carried 2 teams to the NBA Finals in Miami. Yeah. You know, like he's been able to do that before. Can he do it with Golden State? We'll see. But this is obviously a monster injury that affects the entire Western Conference tapestry here.
That is the one thing, you know, as we called it yesterday, he got injured 1 game too late. It was game 8 of the Rockets playoffs, right, basically, where he got injured instead of Chris Paul getting injured in game 5 versus the Warriors. Did I see correctly that he was crying afterwards?
I saw a report that looked like it was an excerpt from an article that he was crying. And then I saw a few more in the same font that were just differently worded. So I don't know if there's a new thing going on the internet where people are typing the first 2 paragraphs of a fake article. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Does Steph strike you as a crier in this type of situation?
Not after a hamstring injury in the first. No, and it's not like he would be doing it because he's in physical pain or anything, he feels like all is lost because he got injured in game 1,
or that this was his only shot to win a title. He's got 4 rings, you know.
Yeah, like, I'll call that fake news without fake even news. At the risk of being delivering fake news and calling it fake news, I'm going to guess it's fake news.
Kerr, I could see crying. Steve Kerr, I could see crying over that. He's kind of sensitive on things like that.
And blaming the officials.
Yes, for sure.
Or Adam Silver himself about it. Yeah.
Did you see? Well,
sometimes he likes to blame the NFL for stuff, weirdly. Out of nowhere. He'll be like, well, the NFL.
Yeah. We'll have this audio later in the show, but Brian Windhorst said on his podcast yesterday that the GPS tracking data on Steph said that he ran 1.99 miles in game 7 against the Rockets. It's the most he's ever run in a single game ever. And you add up the fact that they've been traveling back and forth across the country every other day, went straight to Minnesota. There's some conjecture that, hey, 36 years old and doing all that running in game, I don't know what the solution would have been.
Honestly, for all the people that worry about Steph Curry ruining youth basketball players by jacking up threes, I feel like not I don't feel like people really harp enough on how much he runs. And I know they'll put the stats out there that he runs more in a game than anybody else or anything. But it's just watching him game in and game out year after year versus the Rockets, and then watching the way guys like James Harden operates versus Steph Curry. And I'm like, I want to hate these guys, and I hate how much leniency they get on some of their screens, but he freaking works for it.
Yeah,
he just runs and runs and runs.
I think that's a great example he's setting by doing that, honestly.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. That's what you should be pointing out to you. Yeah, listen, I'll let you shoot from anywhere on the court as long as you run 2 miles in this game, okay, kid?
If you work to get to the spot, you've earned it. Yeah, you can shoot it. Last note, NFL the George Pickens trade yesterday, there was a lot of, I think, just curiosity over how this would play out from a contractual standpoint because Pickens is eligible for an extension. His numbers don't back up getting him a big extension. Some of that is the offense he played in Pittsburgh. Seth, it sounds like both sides, Cowboys and Steelers, and I would imagine the Cowboys probably did a little bit of due diligence on this before pulling the trigger on the trade, I think, is that both sides agree they want this year to be a prove-it year for Pickens. Pickens thinks he can put up bigger numbers in Dallas to get a bigger contract. Cowboys are, as we know, perfectly fine not paying guys.
So, right.
I mean, they still haven't paid Micah Parsons yet. So there will be no contract drama at Cowboys training camp with George Pickens this year.
And I'm wondering if there's at least a wink-wink agreement not to franchise tag him. That would be the big question. If he's going to agree to the trade or not, you know, promise not to hold out or whatever, there might be a little bit either of an agreement not to franchise.
That's a good point because he's not a first-round pick, so there's no fifth-year option for him.
And you can put that in writing because that's what they did with Jadeveon Clowney when he went to Seattle. There was an agreement that he wouldn't be franchise tagged.
Yep. All right, those are your headlines for today. Let's circle back to the Texans. This is a good question Seth has in the rundown. How do the Texans become a top five defense? I know it feels like they're one just based on personnel, but last year they weren't. What do they need to do to get into the – because they may need to be a top five defense if they're going to get to where they want to go this year as a team. What do they need to do to make that happen? We'll go through the list coming up next.